Welcome to the ABM Conversations Podcast, the number one podcast for B2B marketers wanting to explore timeless account-based marketing strategies to drive revenue, customer engagement, retention, and everything that makes sense to both marketers and sales folks. No more fluff. No more vanity metrics. Live from India, made for the world.
Hello and welcome to yet another episode of the ABM Conversations podcast. And this is me, your host Yag. In today's episode, we are going to discuss how to get your marketing right without being stuck with best practices and expert advice. Who better to discuss it with than someone who has exactly done that? We have with us Tim Solo, the CMO of Hrefs, who has walked the talk and taken the company to north of 50 million in ARR at an average of more than 60% year-on-year growth. Tim joined Hrefs in 2015 as their head of marketing and over time became their CMO. He is one of those rare CMOs who is connected to the real marketing on the ground and not amongst those CMOs who are more of C's than M's. So in this episode, Tim is going to share with us the marketing strategy at Hrefs, their content playbook, and how they made a dent in a crowded space. So without further ado, Tim, I'm so happy to have you here. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Yag. Thanks a lot for inviting me. That was a very nice intro. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining. All right, so let's get started. You know, Hrefs came into the scene at a time where the SEO industry was relatively mature and pretty much everyone knew the major players back then, like, you know, SEMrush or Moz or even Majestic for that matter. And the key problem that you guys had at that time was not just about getting people to adopt Hrefs, but also to believe that this is a much better product. And going by the typical definition of category creation or defining a category, you guys were actually jumping into a red ocean. And there were more reasons for you to be a Me Too player that could have gotten lost into the myriad of products out there. So let's start with, you know, why don't you tell us about the evolution of Hrefs' marketing strategy and the team structure that you had back then and how it has evolved right now?
That's a great question. Thank you. First of all, I need to mention that I haven't been with Hrefs from the start. I only joined about 6 years ago. So before me, Hrefs as a company existed for, I think, at least four or five years. So when I joined, the product was already very good. We had a great product. There was a great data in the product, and data is basically how the customers in our industry were comparing products to each other. So in a way, my job as a marketer was very simple. So yeah, like you say, we were basically a new fish in a red ocean with like big sharks swimming around. But I quickly realized, because when I joined Hrefs as a marketer, one of the first thing that I started to do was talk to customers that we already had and talk to other people in the industry and try to understand what's going on, why people are choosing one tool over the other, what do they value in those products, etc., etc. And what I immediately realized is that people, when they do side-to-side comparison of Hrefs like functionality and data to the competing solutions, they choose Hrefs because they like our data more. They like how fast we are, how efficient we are, how accurate we are, and all that. So my job as a marketer was pretty easy. I just needed to educate more people about the more or less objective fact that Hrefs was, I cannot really say, of course I'm biased, but I cannot really say that Hrefs is like generally better than all the competitors. But we definitely have some areas where we are, where like certain specific features and specific functionality is definitely better. So my job was to reach more people with that message, to show them that Hrefs might not be a better product overall. That is questionable. Of course, I think that we are a better product, but some people might argue with me. But we do have our unique features and unique data that is objectively better. So that was our marketing strategy, to bring that information to the market and then let people choose themselves.
Right. So what was the team structure like back in 2015 and when you joined, and how does it look right now? How has the team evolved?
Back in 2015, I was the only marketer. So not to say that the guys at Ahrefs didn't do marketing before I joined. They did. But at the point of me joining the company, there was no dedicated marketing person. So at the time, I was the single marketer in the team. So I was director of marketing, and the only employee was myself. I was director of myself, basically. And right now we have a slightly larger team. Still, our marketing team is incredibly small for the size of the company that we are today. So we have only 10 people in our marketing team. And if we're talking about specifically marketers, so people who actually create marketing content and run all sorts of marketing campaigns, I think that is 5 people, because 5 other people are people who help us, like designers, video animators, video editors, and all that. So actually, the actual number of marketers in our team is very small.
Right. I love that. I've been in your shoe so many times. I love the fun of, you know, starting alone and then building the team from scratch. So love that story. And, you know, I know one of your theories is that people don't sign up for a product and learn to use it, but they rather learn to use the product first and then go on to sign up to become a paid user because they have gotten comfortable with your product. And that's kind of obvious with the way your content and your blogs are structured or the topics that they address. It shows that you folks are super clear about whom you're addressing to. But here's something that I'm not convinced, and that's what I want to dig deeper. I mean, I did see the YouTube video, but I still want to hear from you as to why should someone pay $7 for a 7-day trial period even before having tried your product? In the sense, like, I understand it attracts serious users only and that it is better for your support team and all of that. But from a customer standpoint, it's still a gamble, isn't it?
Yeah, it is absolutely a gamble, and I must say that the decision to have a paid trial, and I believe we are, I don't really know any other SaaS tools that would charge for their trial. Well, maybe there are some tools that charge like $1, which is almost the same for just asking for a credit card number like upfront and charging right. Zero, but I didn't really see any other SaaS companies who would actually charge something more than $1 for doing a trial of their tool. So that is very unique. And like the reason for introducing this paid trial, it actually had nothing to do with kind of the marketing strategy. So I wouldn't say there's any marketing behind this. One of the main reasons was how much people were abusing our trial. So
right.
Yeah, back when we had I think we had $1 trial or even, no, I think we had a free trial, but you had to input your credit card and we let you use Ahrefs for 2 weeks. Right now we charge $7 for using Ahrefs for 1 week, for trialing for 1 week. So back when we had like a free trial and you could like input your credit card number and we wouldn't charge you for 2 weeks, lots and lots of people were simply signing up for like unlimited amount of trials, like a trial after a trial, and just using Ahrefs for free. So we simply wanted to stop this. We wanted people to pay for using our product if they're finding value in using our product, even if they cannot afford like a monthly subscription. They want like to take a trial and like extract some value from like a week of using a product of 2 weeks. We wanted to get compensated for that. So that was one of the main reasons. We just wanted to prevent abuse. From there, I don't know, it was like a nice kind of marketing thing eventually, because it helps us to differentiate ourselves, because people keep wondering how the hell like other similar softwares let me use them for free or trial them for like a dollar or even just for inputting a credit card, and these guys are actually charging $7 just to try them. There must be something special about them. So yeah, it wasn't intentional. We didn't like intend to create this kind of message around Ahrefs, but it is what it is. This is what happened.
Right. I can't agree more with respect to the abusing part, because I myself know a lot of people who do that. They just, you know, use email IDs after email IDs to do that. So I totally get it.
Well, they have to pay for this at least.
Right. And I also love the, you know, the marketing angle that you brought in a little later, like when you recently updated the latest version of the website, you also put up a section saying that, you know, don't spend $7 unless you get to know what the product is all about. So that was fantastic.
Yeah. And this was, again, very, very accidental. So I was on another podcast interview with Pat Flynn. And at the end of the interview, so we were talking mostly about like some basic SEO stuff, because his audience is not very, very knowledgeable in SEO. So we were discussing some very basics. And at the end, he kind of suggested me to promote Ahrefs and to invite people to sign up. He said, like, Tim, so like we had a great conversation. Now, why don't you like give call to action to my audience? What should they do? Like, go and sign up for Ahrefs or what? And I realized that because his audience is not very familiar with SEO in the first place, they are like probably at the point where they want to learn more about how to make their website successful in Google and how to get search traffic, how to get found in Google. I realized that there's absolutely no point of having them go and pay for our trial, especially because, yeah, you need to pay money to try our tools. And if you have no idea how to use them, you're not going to get any value from paying those $7 to us. And this is why, like on the spot, I decided to tell Pat Flynn's audience to go and like visit our YouTube channel, visit our blog, and consume some of our free educational materials, which would actually teach them solutions to some of the marketing slash SEO problems that they have. And then once they learn a little bit about SEO and how to improve their websites and what they should be doing to get more traffic from Google, then they can go ahead and pay $7 to sign up to get a trial of Ahrefs. And then when we were working on the homepage, I don't remember who exactly offered to put this on the homepage. Maybe it was me, maybe it was some other marketer, or maybe it was our designer who was designing the page. I don't remember the story. But yeah, this is how this quote ended up on our homepage. And I believe, again, this is very uncommon. You don't see SaaS companies right on their homepage advising their visitors against signing up for the trial, against following the main call to action of the page. So this is very uncommon. This is like against the conventional knowledge, but the company is still growing. People are still signing up. So everything is fine, which only another proof that you can approach your marketing in all sorts of ways, and there's no like single right way and everything else is wrong. No, you can experiment, and like there are lots of things that might work.
Yeah, absolutely. And marketing is one such humble profession that how many ever years you spend, you still keep learning every single day. I absolutely love that. You know, let's dive a little bit deeper into the content side of things, you know, just that you brought it up. I strongly believe that there shouldn't be a distinction between the so-called top funnel, mid funnel, or bottom funnel content. And when I look at Ahrefs' content across, say, written content or video or audio, looks like you guys do believe in the same way. You know, you don't have any distinction between awareness content or use case content. And I love that. So talk to us a little bit about your content playbook. You know, do you have different target segments to whom you write your content for? Like, what are some common mistakes that you often see content marketers making, which you think if people thought a little more logically, these things could be easily avoided?
Yeah, this is a great question. And I'm continuously impressed by how much you studied our content to ask me those great questions about the stuff that we shared before. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
So yeah, we don't really like the concept of top of the funnel content, middle of the funnel, bottom of the funnel, awareness or blah, blah, blah. We don't really believe in that. We at Ahrefs, we follow a completely different concept. We have kind of not developed, but came up with our own concept, which is called business potential. It is basically a simple score from 0 to 3, which estimates how easy it would be for us to mention or rather sell our product within the content that we are creating, within an article that we are writing. Where 3, the score of 3, means that our product is an absolutely irreplaceable solution for a problem that people are having. So, for example, anything related to backlinks, Ahrefs is the leader in the backlink industry. We are regarded as the gold standard. So we are irreplaceable if you want to get like great data, accurate data about your backlinks. Business potential score of 2 means that your tool is very useful, but it's not essential. So for example, content research. If you want to research content and find popular topics, there are multiple ways to do that, and you don't necessarily even have to use any marketing tools at all. You can just go to websites of your competitors, browse their pages, and see how many tweets they're getting, how many comments they're getting, and all that. So yeah, there are multiple ways to do content research and find interesting topics to write about. Ahrefs is not essential, but it is very helpful. And we can pitch our tool while talking about content research. So this is like business potential score of 2. Business potential score of 1 means that we can mention our product, but the odds that people will buy it are very slim. So for example, let's take a completely different industry. For example, weight loss. If someone is looking to lose weight, we can offer them some fitness equipment. But the thing is, fitness equipment, yeah, it helps you a little bit. But then again, if you want to lose weight, you should have proper diet. You might probably want to use supplements, or I don't know, you might even want to undertake surgery. Those things are incredibly effective in terms of losing weight. But fitness equipment, yeah, you can burn some calories here and there, but it is very hard to lose weight just with fitness equipment. So this would be a business potential score of 1. And 0 means that there is no chance to even mention a product when you're writing an article about something. And we usually avoid business potential of 0. We try to write articles on the topics that would score 2 or 3 on our scale. And as for your question about the kind of personas that we are writing our content for, we don't really think much about this. So it's not that we have like a PDF document that is titled like Stacy, the social media marketing manager. She lives in New York. She has 2 pets, blah, blah, blah. She goes out for a jog in the morning and all that. So we don't have any like blog reader profiles or anything like that. But I think we compensate for that by actually talking to our customers. So we have a Facebook community, we have Twitter, we have customer support who are constantly talking to our customers. I have lots of friends in the industry who I communicate to on a daily basis. So we naturally understand what kind of people we are talking to, what kind of problems they have. And therefore, we don't need to create any of those documents with personas or any of that stuff. We kind of intrinsically feel who we are talking to.
Right, right. I love that. And in fact, I almost expected you to talk the fitness example, because I remember seeing you and Pep Loya posting that video where you did, you know, pull-ups on LinkedIn. That was fantastic. Right. On that note, let me also ask you this. You know, one of the key aspects that a lot of marketers struggle is thinking what to write on. So what are your typical sources of inspiration? Or in other words, like, how do you guys pick up the topics to write on? In a sense, like you said, you speak to your users or you look at your competition. But how do you decide that this topic really makes sense for me, because this is going to help me convert, or this is going to help me drive the right kind of traffic and things like that?
This is a good question, and it probably requires an entire podcast episode of its own. But for the most part, our decision process in terms of picking topics is very much driven by SEO. So if some keyword, a search query, if it gets lots of searches per month in Google, if there's high search traffic potential, this is something we want to write about. Of course, if it is paired with high business potential. So we don't want to write about popular topics if we know that there is no chance for us to mention our product within that article. So yeah, the very simple way to look for content ideas to write about is to simply do keyword research. And I have written a guide about it. It's actually quite fresh. So if you search for keyword research, we should be actually ranking somewhere in the top 5 search results. If not, just search for keyword research Ahrefs and you're going to find it. Keyword research, this is a great way to find topics that you can rank for and get consistent traffic. But then again, other than writing about topics that people are actually searching for, we also want to be the thought leaders of our industry, which means that we have to write about some cutting edge ideas that no one knows about yet, and therefore no one is searching for them. For example, we like to do some data research. Here at HRS, we collect and process lots of data, and quite often we come up with interesting ideas of how we can study this data to come up with some interesting takeaways. And for example, if there is some theory in the industry, we can try to study that theory and put a number to prove that theory or to disprove it. So yeah, this kind of content, it doesn't get lots of traffic from Google, but it does get us lots of credibility, lots of respect, and people start thinking of us as thought leaders in the SEO industry, which is very good for our brand.
One of the things that I've heard you talk about is, you know, you say that you don't believe in traffic volume and never used Google Analytics on Ahrefs' site. And you've also said that you would rather focus on designing content that converts and not waste time on anything else. And yet that led you to have about 1.5 million visitors for your blog alone. So tell us a little about what's the anatomy of a good content that converts? I mean, maybe even take us through the process of how you guys at Ahrefs promote content.
So actually, I wouldn't say that our process of creating content is somehow standardized. So we don't have any like step-by-step process that we would go through to make our content epic. It's mostly about the things that we value, that we put first. And what we put first is unique ideas. No, what we actually put first when targeting topics that people search about is trying to understand what is the searcher intent, what kind of information exactly people are looking for when they're searching for a specific keyword or a specific search query. So understanding search intent helps us understand what kind of angle we should take with our article, what exactly we should write about, how exactly we should approach this. From there, once we know the searcher intent, we need to understand how we can make our article better than what is already ranking there. Like, how can we offer people something unique? Because if we don't have anything unique to say, if we don't have a way to make our article about some keyword better than the already ranking pages, then what's the point of ranking it? People already can get sufficient information from the top ranking search results. So yeah, we actually look for opportunity where we can stand out with our content. And when I say better, a lot of people misunderstand better. They think that if they cram and squeeze more content into their article, that immediately makes it better. So if your competitors have articles of like 1,000 words, I will do 5,000 words and my article would be better. No, that's not how it works. Or like if the articles of my competitors have poor design, they are not well designed, and I will order like a few fancy images for my article, that would immediately make it better. No, that's not how it works as well. So quality content or like great content or like content that is better than other content, that I don't think there is a way to quantify it. So either you have some ideas of how to create content that would resonate with people, or you don't. And the way to understand if your content is good or not is by the feedback from the industry. For example, whenever we publish an article, because you just asked how do we promote our content. So we have accrued a decent audience by that point. So we have like an email list of people who are subscribed to our blog. We have a following on Twitter. I have my personal following on Twitter. Some of our other people who contribute to our blog, they also have their own following on Twitter. We also have a group on Facebook. So whenever we publish a new article, we would send an update about this article to our audience on the existing channels. And like the first indication that the article is good or bad is how that audience would react. Because if you share the article with your followers and no one really cares, no one really leaves any comments, no one really retweets it, no one likes the post, that means that your article is not interesting to them. But sometimes we see that even some of our competitors would tweet our articles. For example, the other day, Rand Fishkin has tweeted one article from our blog while he was still at Moz and while he was our direct competitor. So this speaks something about the quality of our content. If our direct competitor cannot resist tweeting one of our articles because it is so awesome that he wants to share it with their audience, that means that the article is good. So yeah, it's not really up to you. And I'm saying this, I'm talking to the listeners. It's not up to you to decide if your article is good or not. It is up to the industry to decide this. So whatever you think about your content, how awesome or amazing it is, it doesn't matter. Forget about it. Share it with your audience, share it with the industry, and they will tell you if your article is good or bad.
Right. And do you believe in content syndication? Does it make sense in that whole journey?
To be honest, we haven't been doing content syndication for a while. I don't think that is a strategy anymore. So I don't think any website is interested to like republish someone else's content, apart from maybe the case when from time to time some bloggers will reach out to us and ask if they can translate our article from English to their own language and publish it on their own blog. But even then, in the past few years, we started blogs in different languages at Ahrefs, and we basically translate our articles ourselves to different languages. So we no longer want our articles to be translated and published elsewhere, because we can translate our articles ourselves and post it on our own blog. So I don't really see why would anyone want to syndicate your content, as in republish your content on their website, like creating duplicate content, basically.
Right, right. Makes sense. And now let's shift a little bit and talk about revenue growth. You know, whether we are talking about signups or conversion, what matters is how marketing ultimately contributes to revenue growth. And probably that's why, you know, you, Tim, are hands down beating the industry reports where everybody's talking about the average tenure of a CMO is about 24 months and things like that. You know, you've been there for quite some time. And I also guess there is this something about CMOs originally coming from Ukraine, I guess. So what are some of the revenue levers that you use at Ahrefs?
It's an interesting question. And I think it's not me who is unique. It is the actual company that is unique. And it is the founder of that company. It is Dmitry who is unique, because I actually credit lots of my ideas and the things that I believe in to Dmitry, because it is actually thanks to him. He was guiding me and he was telling me which things I shouldn't focus on. So essentially, the company is growing not thanks to me, but thanks to Dmitry. And to your question about revenue, so Dmitry is also unique in a sense that in the 6 years that I've been working at Ahrefs, he never asked me to create a single performance report for him. So I haven't created annual reports, quarterly reports. I haven't ever created annual plans for marketing. I haven't like made a case for budgeting like marketing activities. So I never did any of that stuff. And still our company is growing well. Everything is growing, like the traffic is growing, revenue is growing. And basically when I just joined the company, I asked Dmitry like, okay, so what is my KPI? What do you expect from me? What number do you want me to grow? And he said that if I focus you on any specific number, would it be like the number of leads or the number of trials or the number of customers or the traffic number or like any or conversion numbers, you might be tempted to sacrifice some other areas in favor of pumping this number, and it can be quite artificial. So the number might be good, but in the grand scheme of things for the company, it would be bad. So he said that like what I want from you is to like help grow the company and like do good marketing. And even with the revenue, so he wanted me, of course, he wanted me to help grow the number of customers. He wanted me to help grow the revenue. But then when I asked him, like, so can you tell me that the revenue growth is the ultimate goal of Ahrefs? Like, this is what we focus on, and we should prioritize everything that that can help us grow revenue. To which he also said no, because there are some things that some marketing tricks or tactics that we believe to be unethical. So we wouldn't do them in favor of growing our revenue. So Mitri is actually willing to sacrifice revenue growth to be able to maintain his integrity, to be able to maintain his philosophy, and to be able to do business the way he thinks is the right way to do business. So this is very interesting. And so, yeah, that said, as the chief marketing officer or director of marketing, I don't really have any KPIs, and Dmitry is not expecting anything, is not expecting me to grow any specific number, but he's expecting me to make good decisions and to make decisions that are in line with what the company believes in and with what he personally believes in. So I think I'm in a very unique situation with that.
I love that, because a lot of places I've seen marketing managers and, you know, head of growth and all these people spending weeks in coming up with documents and plans that goes on multiple revisions. And then suddenly, you know, when a situation like COVID comes, everything that you worked on does not make sense at all.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. This is so stupid.
Right. So that brings us to the next section of our podcast, which we, you know, work like a game show. We call it the rapid fire section. Here, I'm going to try my best to put you on the spot and ask five pointed questions. And the questions may be short and pointed, but your answers need not be. Just say whatever comes to your head. All right. So shall we get going?
Yeah. Okay. Let me stretch a little bit.
All right, here's question number one. You believe that proper onboarding can fix a leaky bucket issue. So can you explain that?
That's a good question. I think I talked about it in one of my videos on the second YouTube channel that we have at Ahrefs. And I'm not sure I have like a quick answer to that. But basically, there are two types of onboarding. The onboarding that happens before person signs up, when they're doing their own research, when they're studying what your product does, if they should sign up for it at all. So by the time they sign up, they already have some body of knowledge about your product, and they have certain expectations. So you should be careful with that, and you should have enough information for people who are doing research of your company, of your product, to help them make a decision to sign up. And then when they do sign up, there's still a gap between what they know and what they kind of should know to be successful with whatever task they came to accomplish. And you should fill that gap with your onboarding materials. And to be honest with you, Ahrefs was pretty successful with the pre-boarding. So all the stuff that happens before you sign up for Ahrefs. But when you sign up, we don't really have any sophisticated like marketing automation and such that would help people to further learn more about our product, which is something that we want to invest more into in the coming years.
Right. That's very beautifully said. All right. So here's question number two. You get to spend higher. Where would you spend? Would it be on promoting content or would it be on producing content?
Producing content, of course, because if you put enough effort into producing content, eventually it would promote itself. There's just no way around it. If you produce like a killer article with killer ideas, with something that helps people a lot, that people like when they read this article, their life will never be the same. They would want to share it with others. So, when you create amazing content, you can rely on word of mouth. But when you create like okay content and try to put a lot of money into promoting it, the ROI of those dollars that you spend on promoting mediocre articles is very bad. So yeah, I would rather create great content and don't worry about promotion rather than create bad content and look for ways to put it in front of more people.
Yeah, I absolutely like this because I always tell people that marketing is all about building trust and building relationship. So at the end of the day, if your content doesn't build trust, and there's no point spending, you know, thousands of dollars in promoting that.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So here's question number three. Sponsoring podcasts or being a guest on podcasts, what pays higher returns to you?
Being a guest, 100%.
Nice. That's interesting. So any specific reason or any data that you looked at?
Like the answer is easy. When you sponsor a podcast, you get to speak to the customers for 30 seconds, and through the mouth of the podcast host. So they only speak about your product for 30 seconds. But when you're a guest on the podcast, you get to talk to the audience for 40 minutes, an hour. So you get lots of attention, and you can connect with people on a much more deeper level.
Right. I'm loving this because you keep things so real, you know, that works, makes a conversation very beautiful. All right. So here's question number four. Here's a powerful statement that you made almost a year back. You said guest blogging for the most part is utterly useless. So I would like to hear the logic and experience behind this.
Oh, did I say this?
Yes. I think this was about posting on the other sites or things like that.
Yeah. So that is interesting. I'm not sure if I would say this again right now, so I have some slight change of opinion, but I think I do remember why I said that, and I said this because when you have a really great piece of content, you want to have it to yourself, because this is something that can generate backlinks to your website, this is something that can generate traffic to your website, and when you spend time to write content for others, for the most part, the top blogs in your industry, they don't allow guest posts. So it is there is a very limited amount of websites where you can publish a guest post and get lots of traffic to this guest post. So most of the time, guest posting is used as an SEO strategy to create rather generic content that no one really wants to read. But that brings backlinks to your website. So this is why I said that it is better to create amazing content on your own website, and backlinks will come naturally, kind of what we just discussed, as opposed to spending your time creating that mediocre content and submitting it to mediocre websites. But the reason why I said that, I wouldn't say this specific phrase today, is because I think that there's still value in finding those five, 10 biggest websites in your industry where you do have a chance to get published and where you do have a chance to have your content being put in front of a large audience. And you should do this. So this is my kind of philosophy today. So guest posting at scale, it doesn't really make sense. Unless you want to do this for links, which is risky, because Google might see that you're only doing your guest articles for links, and you might get penalized. But guest blogging can be very useful if you build relationships with 5 or 10 of the biggest websites in your industry and post your guest articles there to be able to get exposure in front of their large audience. So yeah, yes and no. Guest posting is bad, but it is also good in some cases as well.
Right. The interesting point about what you just said and the changing opinion is that, in fact, I posted this yesterday on LinkedIn saying that, if you don't change an opinion or change your opinion on certain things, looking back at how things have, panned out, then you're not really learning. So I love that, you reflected on that and you said, right now, based on my experience, my opinion has changed again. So love that part. So here's the final question of the rapid fire section. I think this is going to be fairly easy for you. So what makes Tim Sulo the CMO who could go beyond the 24-month period?
The answer to this, it's not me, it's the company, and it's the founder of this company. So the way that Ahrefs works and the way that Dmitry, our CEO and founder, builds his business is what allows me to stay here for 6 years already and be happy, and I'm not looking to go anywhere else anytime soon.
Love that. That's a great story and a great
Dmitry
testimony.
Is not looking to fire me as well.
I really don't think so. So, right. So that brings us to the close of this particular episode, and I'm so happy that there is so much of nuggets of wisdom and so much that I could go back and listen to and probably even make a huge blog out of this, because there's so much of content here. But before I let you go, if you had to share a parting message with our audience who are majorly B2B SaaS marketers and sales folks, so what would that message be?
Let me try to finish this off with two messages. So the first message is, as a marketer, try to be as close to your target customers as possible. So try to make sure that you talk to them often. Try to make sure that you participate in communities where your target customers are hanging out. Make sure you understand them well. And second, try to create something unique. Don't create more copies of what is already there. Try to come up with something unique, awesome, where you can put your name on it, and when you can say, I was the first one to say this, or I was the first one to do this, or this was my idea. So like to move things forward, to have some progress, to have some innovation, you have to create new things. So focus on creating new things rather than copying already existing things. Or at least if you copy existing things, try to innovate so that to make those existing things better.
Right. Love that. And for the people listening to the show today, if they want to get in touch with you, where can they connect with you? And what are possibly the best reasons for connecting with you?
Great question. Thank you. So I'm quite active on Twitter. And the way I tweet is usually very conversational. So rather than trying to kind of endow my knowledge on other people and like pretend to be a smart ass and know all answers to the questions, I actually tweet a lot of questions and I solicit answers from people who follow me, which ends up in all sorts of great conversations. So yeah, if you want to continuously have interesting conversations, interesting questions about marketing to be put in front of you and see how different people answer those questions, you should go follow me on Twitter, Tim Solo.
Right. That was one of the most humblest CTAs that I've ever heard. that's really beautiful.
Thank you.
And thank you so much, Tim, for making it. And I really appreciate your time. And for the listeners of the podcast, that's that from us in this episode. And until we connect you next time with another topic and another immensely great person, this is bye from me, Yag. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the ABM Conversations Podcast. Make sure you subscribe and share your comments with us. We're constantly looking for your feedback, thoughts, and suggestions to make the show more relevant to you.